go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down through the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome into Big Blue Kickoff Live on this Tuesday afternoon. Anita Marks and John Schmelk here with you. Obviously, as we know, the show is for Giants fans and a lot to get to. Phone lines will be open throughout the show, 201-939-4513 if you want to call in. Also, both John and I will be monitoring Twitter throughout the show. Make sure you include that hashtag Giants Chat. We will share your tweets, questions, comments throughout the show as well. Also, we have a very special guest who's joining us. We are starting kind of a new segment here on Big Blue Kickoff Live throughout the season. We're going to preview each and every Giants opponent. And today we're talking Philadelphia Eagles. And John, who'd you book for the show today?
We have Dave Spadaro from PhiladelphiaEagles.com. He'll be joining us, so we'll have him on the show and we'll talk some Eagles. And I think, as you would, I think, agree, Anita, they're the most fascinating team to me in the NFC East. So many questions on both sides of the ball, so many new players. It'll be good to get the inside look from somebody that's been with them throughout the offseason.
Great. So we'll really dive into the Philadelphia Eagles team, that matchup for the Giants. As we know, they'll face them twice in the regular season. Who knows? Hopefully, fingers crossed, Giants make it to the postseason. They might they might face them three times. But let's talk about, really, obviously, the elephant on the table, in the room, the biggest storyline right now, and that's nationally, and that is Jason Pierre-Paul, JPP. John, I know you're here at the facility every day. What are the Giants saying right now in regard to the situation with Jason Pierre-Paul?
Well, the thing about it is that there hasn't been anybody in this facility since last Wednesday. This office was closed on Thursday, Friday, and Monday. Now, that doesn't mean that people weren't around working and doing their due diligence, obviously. And everyone knows the report that's out there that Jason Pierre-Paul had some sort of hand injury in a 4th of July fireworks accident. That is just a report. What I can say is this. The Giants do not have any reaction, statement, or information regarding those reports. So right now everything is really just speculation and hearsay, Anita. They're investigating it. As soon as they have more information, it'll be forthcoming. We'll have it here on the show. We'll have it on Giants.com. As soon as they get all the information they need to make a statement, the Giants will do that. And stay tuned to Giants.com for that. So at this point, any speculation that he's going to miss X number of games, X amount of time, or any time at all, really is premature. Enough information has not been gathered yet to make that sort of determination. So if you guys want to call in and talk about the defense, talk about the defensive line, that's great. But we do not have any more information on JPP than what's out there in reporting, and the Giants have not confirmed or denied anything that's out there. They're gathering information. As soon as they're ready to have a statement, they'll have one.
And that's important because for a number of reasons. Number one, JPP is on the defensive side of the ball, the face of this franchise, and really the straw that a lot of people anticipate to make that, stir that drink for the defense. And so I credit the Giants for how they're handling this and wanting to be as thorough as they can before they make a statement, before any news is released. And I will say this, as soon as I saw the news break and all the rumors and everything that was flying on in social media, prayers go out to JPP and his family, and for all of us here at the Giants facility, really wishing, hoping that it is not as severe as some of the reports out there, and that he'll be A-okay and back in action regular season game one against the Dallas Cowboys.
Absolutely right, and I think the most important thing, and you mentioned all the reports. I mean, the reports and stories that are out there have changed around three or four times already. So there's no need to overreact to anything at this point. Again, everything that's out there is simply speculation and reports. The Giants, as soon as they have all the information and know exactly what the deal is, they'll have a statement. They'll tell everybody what's up. Until then, we'll move forward.
All right. So obviously, why don't we focus on the defensive line?
Sure.
And again, understand something. We don't know what the situation is. Just like John just said, we don't know. There's a very good chance that JPP will play week one. But let's look at the talent that's on this team, and specifically the defensive line and the defensive ends. So I'll throw this out to you, John. I'll let you kick it off in regard to what are you expecting from a number of these guys. First and foremost, let's start with DeMontre Moore. For me, you know, I think I've hosted a few shows with you and Lance and Paul, and we've always talked about, like, who do you have your eye on this year? For me, on the offensive side of the ball, it's wide receiver Reuben Randall. I want to see him take a really big step forward this year. And on the defensive side of the ball, I always said, I've been saying this all offseason, it's DeMontre Moore. I think we've seen him mature in regard to the way that he pretty much came in here and was the class clown, and everybody loves a class clown, but I think we've seen his maturity level really elevate since he's arrived. I'm really hoping that this is the year for him, but there's so much he needs to prove.
Yeah, you know, I hoped it was going to be the year for him too, Anita, and I think the most disappointing thing is that he had to have that shoulder injury in the offseason, and I think you mentioned him improving mentally and becoming more mature. That was part of it too. But in order for him to take that next step, he also had to mature a lot physically. He needed to get stronger. How do you get stronger? You lift weights. Can you lift weights if you have a bum shoulder and you have to have off-season, you know, procedure on it and you can't lift weights as much as you would like? No, you can't. So that to me was disappointing. Now, as soon as he's able and he's doing all the work that his injury allows him to do and the trainers allow him to do and he's working at it, he's trying to do his best, but an injury is an injury. So I think it's going to be maybe slower progress than I would have liked simply because of the injury, I think, held back some of the stuff he needed to get better at over the course of the season. But I will say this. As a pure pass rusher, he's probably one of the top two or three most talented guys on this roster. So if you get him out there in third and long, and you know Steve Spagnuolo likes to rotate those defensive ends, especially in passing situations, even if he doesn't become that quote-unquote great two-way player run pass this year, I think you can find ways to get him on the field and be a contributor as a pass rusher.
Again, phone lines are open, 201-939-4513. Nita Marks, John Schmelk, and of course you on Big Blue Kickoff Live, talking about the defensive line. And what are expectations? What are your expectations as Giants fans for a number of these defensive linemen heading into this season? Let's talk about Robert Ayers. Now, Robert Ayers, what, 5 sacks, right, early on in the season? Unfortunately, he got injured, but he looked good.
Oh, yeah.
Is it safe to say, outside of Jason Pierre-Paul, that Ayers is the best pass rusher the Giants have coming off that end?
I think.
Is that safe to say?
You are going to see Robert Ayers play the Justin Tuck role that Tuck had when he was here with Steve Spagnuolo in 2007-2008. He's going to play that left defensive end spot a lot. I do think he's probably the second most talented pass rusher on the roster. I agree with you. And I think on third down, you'll see him move inside the tackle a lot. Every person I've talked to on this coaching staff this offseason, when you ask about Robert Ayers, they say, we love his ability to rush from the interior, from that 3-technique defensive tackle spot. So I think, especially in passing situations, you're going to see him in those situations a lot, rushing from the inside. But at the same time, he can play that defensive end spot. And I thought the interesting thing was, Anita, coming here from Denver, you know, they played the 3-4 up there when he was there, and he got stuck playing the 3-4 defensive end spot, which isn't a premier pass rushing position. You know, in the 3-4, it's your outside linebacker that's going to rush the passer a lot. And he was known as a good run player, but not a dynamic pass rusher. Last year, I think he had some issues from time to time against the run, but he was an excellent pass rusher. So I'd like to see his game balance out a little bit this year. Try to get a little bit better against the run, be a little bit more disciplined in that regard, but also maintain that pass rusher ability. I think if Robert Ayers stays healthy, I think he could be the second or third best defensive lineman on this team. No question about it.
What about Kerry Wynn? What are your expectations for Kerry Wynn this season?
I think he just has to prove that he can do it consistently with a lot of snaps. You saw him in flashes last year. Take that next step. And I think he's another guy, like Ayers, that's flexible. I think he can go inside in pass rushing situations and rush on third and long. And I think he'll be solid outside as well. See him more as a two-way defensive lineman, stop the run, stop the pass. Again, good production last year in limited time. Let's see him expand that over a larger number of snaps.
And last but not least, George Selvey. Of course, he's been in the league for 6 years.
Rock solid. I mean, George Selvey is going to give you exactly what you want. He's going to be a stalwart at left end. He's going to stop the run. He'll do a decent job rushing the passer. But you know what you're getting with him. He knows his assignments. He's going to stop the run. He's a veteran leader, much in the same way Colin Jenkins is. Remember, we saw Colin Jenkins play defensive end a lot during minicamp and OTAs because of all the injuries with DeMontre Moore and things like that. So I think Selvey and Colin Jenkins are both very reliable veterans that you put them in there and you know exactly what you're getting.
I had a conversation with Paul Dottino the other day.
I'm sorry about that.
You're so funny. And I asked him about the defensive line and what he thought would happen if by chance the Giants do start the season without JPP. And he thinks that it very well could be a situation where Spags has such a variety of talent that on first down where they're anticipating a team to rush, you know, maybe they go Selvey and Wynn on the defensive ends. And then, you know, third down and long, maybe they put in a DeMontre Moore and a Robert Ayers. That maybe Spags will kind of be utilizing these guys in a rotation type of way,
yep,
based on the down and the anticipation of the opponent.
I think that's a really good point. And to take it the other way, I think week one against Dallas, if you're really trying to stop the run early on, who says you can't have George Selvey at one end and Colin Jenkins at the other with two defensive tackles in Hankins and Kenrick Ellis from the Jets? You get four big, you know, 290, 285-plus run stuffers in there to try to stop the run against the Cowboys. And the one guy we didn't mention, I forgot about him too, is Big O.
That's right, Big O. I mean, but imagine, you know, already we've had a situation where Beattie goes down because of pectoral injury. And then now, next man up, a rookie, Ereck Flowers, having to step in to play that left tackle position. Who knows? I'll tell you what, I want to say maybe it was a show with Lance. I know you and I haven't discussed this, but like, Double O's physique, I look at him and I don't think rookie.
Hey, he was a
he doesn't look like a rookie.
I mean,
know.
That's, there you go. He has an NFL body. You're absolutely right.
Oh my goodness gracious! Like,
reminds
me
of Andre Williams last year when he came in. You're like, that does not look like a college player.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm really excited, and I apologize that I totally left him off the list.
I always forget him too. Don't worry about it.
But that's a guy that very well you don't know. That's a guy who could very well. I mean, did we know Odell Beckham Jr. was going to step up and have the season that he had this season?
Absolutely not.
No, we didn't.
So fans writing him off after he missed the first two regular season games with a hamstring injury.
So, you know, you don't know what a rookie could bring to the table, and I've been so impressed with what I've seen from him already. So that is definitely a young man that you want to keep an eye on throughout camp. John, let's head out to our calls.
Yeah, let's do it.
201-939-4513. Again, the phone number, Nita Marks, John Schmelk, and you. Let's kick it off line one with Christian calling in from New York. Christian, you're first up.
How's it going?
Doing well, Christian. How are you, pal?
Hello?
Christian.
Yep, you're up.
You got us, pal.
Hello?
Hello, Christian.
Yeah, we got you. Can you hear us?
Hello?
I don't think Christian can hear us. Dave, do me a favor. Put him back on hold, and we'll see what's going on with Christian there. Why don't you pick him up, see if he can hear you on the phone there. Maybe we lost the connection. 201-939-4513.
Should we try another line?
Oh, well, let's see if the second one works, and if it doesn't, that means I might have to try to fix something.
Okay. All right, let's go to line three. Stefan calling in from New York. Can you hear us?
Hello?
Hi.
Stefan, you there, pal?
I guess you guys can't hear me, but I'm going to say it anyway. I think it's very interesting that JPP was playing with fireworks, even though he is the franchise player, you know, number one. And I wanted to hear you guys' comments on what you thought of the report when it came out on, Sunday? Another thing, I wanted to know if you guys watched, watched the Women's World Cup, if you had a chance to take a sneak peek at that onslaught that happened in the first half. And my thing is, I think the defensive line will be fine. I just think that JPP, you know, his hand being burnt a little bit, I think the fans should just relax, you know. It's okay. He'll be fine. You know, if anything, it's just he'll be, sidelined for, probably for a couple of days for a training camp, but I think when they get back and they get going, that he'll be fine. I can't hear you guys, but I want to hear your comments on if you've seen the World Cup and what did you think about the report when it first came out. Thank you for taking my call.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Just to make a quick comment here, obviously we're having some technical difficulties. But
and I'm going to go work on that right now. So why don't you talk about the World Cup a little bit? Give me 15 seconds.
Talk about the World Cup. I'm sure everybody tuned in to Big Blue Kickoff Live, John, to hear me talk about the World Cup. A few things. Number one, when social media kind of exploded, no pun intended, on Sunday in regard to JPP, I mean, the first thing I thought of was, my goodness, I just hope the young man is okay. I just hope he's safe. One thing, I've been covering professional sports for a long time. There's always so many stories, and you know, you just don't want to believe the first thing you hear. So again, as John mentioned when we started the show, the Giants are doing everything they can to get the most information, and as soon as they're comfortable that they've gathered all the information that they need to, they will make a statement. And when that happens, you'll be able to hear it right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, of course, on Giants.com as well. So you definitely want to stay tuned for that. In regard to the World Cup, I can't say enough wonderful things. You know, it was just so thrilling to see the women's USA team represent the United States in that form, that fashion. Obviously, it was a revenge game. You know, they wanted to get back at Japan. They felt that that the World Cup in 2011 was their World Cup. They had two leads that they had let go. And, of course, as we know, they lost in penalty kicks. And to come out in that form and that fashion and dominate so soon and so early, I think was tremendous. I think it kind of took away from the excitement of the game, especially towards the end of the second half, where you kind of like to be on the edge of your seat, and maybe some people, as deranged as that might sound, would like the like for it to go into penalty kicks. But the way that the United States women's team played defense throughout the tournament, once they went up, and they were up, they had four goals. To me, there was no way I thought that Japan. I was shocked that Japan scored two goals after that. I would be absolutely like just thrown.
I'll tell you what though, after they scored,
if Japan would have come back and scored four goals on that USA team, because
I agree,
their defense was just so sick. Do you know, going into that game, mm-hmm, Hope Solo only had 7 shots on goal. The entire tournament, 7. That's it. I mean, that's how good this defense was. So, you know, it was pretty amazing, and it's pretty exciting. Now, what does this mean for soccer moving forward? I don't think it means much. I think the lure and the excitement was the patriotism behind it all.
I agree with that.
And the fact that it was the United States. Hopefully, you know, once the Olympics rolls around, we'll get right back into it again. World Cup and Olympics, I think the interest and the intrigue and the excitement for soccer increases. But out of that, unfortunately, it dips, just because there's so many other sports here that are that take precedent.
I do see it growing in popularity, though. Even like the English Premier League and stuff like that, you see more and more people watching it. So I do think it is growing in popularity. I think the phones are squared away, by the way. So if you want to try Christian in New York again,
okay,
we can.
All right, let's try this one more time.
Let's see if that works.
Let's go to line 2. Christian calling in from New York. Christian,
can you hear me, pal?
Hey, I hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Loud and clear, boss. Go
All
ahead.
Right.
All right. Hey, I was originally calling about DeMontre Moore, but that's tied into another subject that we probably don't want to talk about so much. So,
hey, Christian, anything you want to ask about DeMontre Moore is fine. Go right ahead. It's all good.
Okay, well, I want to talk about how DeMontre Moore's biggest fit, and I called about this a couple months ago, is on that right side.
I agree with you.
And I think that he's probably ready to play over there more so than he is on the left side right now. So, I mean, if hypothetically, you know, we don't have JPP for a while, you know, I mean, we would obviously miss his run stopping. But DeMontre Moore might have a little more to add to that pass rush.
You know what, Christian? I pray to God you're right. And like I said, I think this is really the year for DeMontre Moore. At least for me it is. And you hate to see a guy get a huge opportunity based on somebody else's injury. But, you know, his number, he might really have to step up in an even bigger way this year. We don't know. We don't know what the situation is with JPP. We just don't know. And we're getting a ton of tweets on Twitter right now asking, are you and John being honest? Yeah, we are being honest. We're here at the facility, and there's not a lot of information. The Giants are doing their due diligence to get all the information they need before they make a comment, and they don't have it yet.
Hey, guys, so, I've been literally making phone calls and sending emails all morning back and forth with people in the organization, making sure I give you guys the most up-to-date and best information the team has on today's show. And they do not have everything together yet to make that sort of statement. So That's all I got for you. I mean, me speculating isn't going to get you good information. It's going to get you wrong information. And frankly, it's going to get my butt out on the street. So that's not going to do anybody any good.
Yeah. But from a long-term perspective, though, if they never reach a good agreement on a contract, DeMontre Moore probably could be the future of that right side.
You know, Christian, and I agree with you, just in terms, not in terms of long-term future trying to replace JPP. I'm not going there, all right? But I will say this. I agree with you that DeMontre Moore, in terms of natural fit as a pass rusher, is a right end. Because you want that right end to be your speed guy, to get around the edge and pressure the quarterback. The guy on the left side, you want to be more of a two-way guy. Stop the run, play with a little bit more power. And to me, DeMontre Moore is a speed rusher. He's OC. Where did OC always play? He played over at right end. That's where JPP is. So I agree. If you want to talk about ideal fit in terms of skill set, I think DeMontre Moore, if you pick out his ideal position on the field, it would be a right end long term. I agree with that.
And he could be an elite rusher. He really could.
He has flashed that ability, but he has to do it consistently.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope it happens.
Thanks, Christian.
Christian, thanks for the phone call. 201-939-4513. Let's go to line four. Rodney is calling in from Hampton, Virginia. Rodney, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Hello, how are y'all doing today?
Doing well, Rodney. How are you, pal?
All right, man. All right. Good to hear from you, people. I just have a question in the wake of JPP injury and stuff, and I hope he recovers and everything. Is there a possibility the Giants organization could look at possibly bringing OC back? You know, I've seen him on Instagram and everything, and he's still working out and staying fit and everything. And I would think, you know, if they would bring him back as a third down situational pass rusher, you know, he's already worked with Spags and knows what to expect. Would it be possible for the Giants to bring him back for 1 year possibly?
Look, I don't think it's possible. He's a free agent. He doesn't have a team yet, so it's certainly something the Giants could consider if push comes to shove. And I do
think if they do bring him back, what are you realistically expecting?
20
from
snaps
OC?
A game, third and long, get after the quarterback. You're not going to get much more than that at this point in his career.
And I'll go one step further. I mean, if you look at this roster and you look at the defensive linemen that are on this roster, defensive ends, guys that plug the middle. There's a lot of talent here. There's a lot of talent here that Spags can work with.
Do you want to take snaps away from the young guys for someone like OC?
I can't honestly sit here and say that there's a guy out there right now that the Giants need to go out and get and grab and bring it. I think the Giants organization has done a really good job at building the depth on this defensive line.
I agree.
That's true. I'm very excited by that. Not only the defensive ends that we have, but the young defensive tackles that we have too, like Bromley and Hankins. I think very much so. Hankins is coming into his own, and he's definitely going to be a big threat this season. You know.
No, I agree. And Rodney, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I think Hankins is going to be potentially the best defensive lineman on this team last year, even if JPP was 100% coming in. I think Hankins could be the best defensive lineman on the team. A couple tweets I want to get to, Anita, really quick.
Okay.
Real quick, Ricker at 81, not to look too far ahead, but can you explain the NFI list and how this impacts JPP's franchise number if it were to come to that? Now, again, we're not saying it is. What the NFI list is, you can put a player on that list for a non-football injury. That's what the NFI stands for, a non-football injury list. And if they're on that list, you do not have to pay him his per-game salary while he's on that list. That's how that rule works because it's a non-football injury. I was talking to Bob Pop about it today. I had another chance to look it up. Bob thought he remembered Ryan Grant being put in that list back in the mid-2000s when he hurt himself. I think it was a rookie year with the Giants. So that's how that list works. So that could be something to look at down the road. At Savage Life 69, JPP as a player, what's your opinion of him on the field? How big of an impact does he have as a player? Here's my thing about JPP, and I've said this a couple different times. Very good against the run. Excellent run player, which is funny because when he came into the league, that was his weakness. But I think in terms of pass rushing, he has to get more consistent. You know, and Jerry Reese said this after the year. His first 8, 9, 10 games last year, you didn't see his name mentioned a whole lot. He wasn't all over the place. So I think If you can turn that production the final six or seven games through the whole year, that's the type of player you're looking for, and that's how good he did, you know, when he had that monster sophomore year in the NFL. That's when he was at his best, when he was more consistent. So if he can be more consistent, he can become that type of player.
We have our special guest on.
Oh, let's do it.
Let's go to him. His name is Dave Spadaro. Of course, he covers all things Philadelphia Eagles. You can check out their website, eagles.com. Dave, how you doing? How are you? Anita Marks and John Schmelk with you today.
Hi, guys. Well, you know, for the one of the rare times in this offseason, it's quiet here. So it's kind of nice.
That is true, and it is not quiet here, as I'm sure you could imagine.
So,
yeah, go ahead, Danita.
So I mean, for me, Dave, the biggest story obviously is your quarterback situation. I'm a big Sam Bradford fan. I'm so intrigued in regard to A, his health, curious what he's looked like to you through OTAs and, of course, the little mini camp, and B, how he is going to fit into Chip Kelly's system.
Well, I mean, through the spring, you know, he was really limited. He didn't take part in any 11-on-11 practices. He threw on 7-on-7. So in those drills, he looked good. He's very accurate. Again, he's wearing the red jersey, so nobody's touching him. There's no live pass rush. Defensive players can't really do much. So you take it kind of with a grain of salt. He looked like he picked up the offense very well, and he's got a strong arm, and he's a big guy, and throws a great football. But when they get back on the field on August 2nd, I think I counted it up. It's 44 days between then and the opener in Atlanta on Monday Night Football. So in 44 days, can you get Sam Bradford up to speed to start an NFL game, having not played for the most part since, you know, 2013. So it's just a lot to get done in a very short period of time. The Eagles are banking on him being okay. You know, he fits the system. He's got the skill set. How healthy is he? That's the big question. I can't answer the question because we just haven't seen him do anything.
Dave, is his knee going to be healthy enough, you think, to play in a preseason game, or are they going to hold him back and then just throw him out there?
I can't imagine that they would put him in a regular season game without playing first in the preseason. I can't imagine that. I think Sam kind of talked about it. I mean, they do expect him to be ready to go, and hopefully for that first preseason game, August 16th.
But, Dave, it's interesting because you said he fits the system. A lot of people don't believe that he does, especially with his mobility coming off of all the knee surgeries that he's had.
You know, Anita, I think one of the things that as the media, and we've learned it here from Chip, we tend to put people in a box a little bit, and Chip Kelly's not one of those people you put in a box. He's made it work with Nick Foles. He's made it work with Mark Sanchez to a degree. He doesn't have that. He made it work with Michael Vick until Michael was hurt. He can make it work with the personnel that he has. He's just a really brilliant offensive mind. And if he's got a big, strong quarterback who's able to drop back and throw the football, it's really a run-first offense here. And I think the perception of what Chip Kelly, his offensive mind, was stems from what we saw at Oregon with the mobile quarterback. But Chip has done it in the NFL with quarterbacks who are certainly not mobile. And that's why I think what when I say his skill set fits what Chip does, historically, Sam has made good decisions. Sam has been minimal on the turnovers, and Sam has been accurate with the football. And that's what Chip Kelly's looking for.
You know, and we're joined by Dave Spadaro, PhiladelphiaEagles.com. And David, you took the words right out of my mouth, because I was going to say, much like, you know, people have misconceptions about Tom Coughlin, I think one big misconception with Chip Kelly is that he wants to throw the ball 50, 60 times a game. He wants to run the football. He wants to run it, frankly, with power and not have guys dancing around in the backfield. I think one of the reasons they decided to let go of LeSean McCoy. And now you guys have a great stable of running backs. You bring in DeMarco Murray, Ryan Matthews. You still have Darren Sproles there. Can you just talk about how this running game is coming together and what type of balance offensively we might see from the Eagles this season?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right about the run first, pass second kind of thing. And he wants the run to set up the pass. He wants to be downhill in the run game. Matthews is 225 pounds. Murray's 220 pounds. They both have had great success in the red zone. which was a huge problem for this team last year. They were 23rd in the league in touchdown efficiency in the red zone.
Wow.
And so at less than 50% conversions. So they will run the football. They will come right at you. They've got three really strong offensive linemen, left tackle Jason Peters, center Jason Kelce, right tackle Lane Johnson. Questions at both guard positions because there's been change there. And so taking some of the pressure off of Sam is going to be essential. They don't want Bradford to come in here and throw the football 45 times. They want to run it. They want to set up for the pass. They want to hit you down the field. And this group, now how they work it with all three of those backs, I would imagine Sproles will maybe displace just a little bit more than he has. He only caught 40 passes last year. We kind of expected him to catch maybe 55, 60 passes. Didn't happen. So they might move him around the formation just a little bit more to create some matchups. But there's no doubt that on paper, those three backs give the Eagles great talent, great flexibility, great depth.
Dave Spadaro joining myself and John Schmelk here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, a new segment that John's put together, a great idea, previewing each and every team the Giants are going to face in 2015. As we know, they'll face Philadelphia Eagles twice. Let's talk about all the weapons that Sam Bradford's going to have to work with. Jordan Matthews, they go out, they draft a young wide receiver. You could probably pronounce his name. I cannot.
Nelson Aguilar.
There you go. Riley Cooper.
Well done.
And I love the fact Zach Ertz is dating Julie Johnston, one of the defensive soccer players for the...
Really?
Oh, yeah. So Zach Ertz was actually in Canada cheering on his girlfriend. What is it? Hope Solo's married to Jeremy Stevens, former Seattle Seahawks tight end. Zach Ertz is dating Julie Johnston, who just won the World Cup. What's up with all these soccer players dating all these NFL tight ends, Dave?
Invest in those genetics, boy. I'll tell you. I mean, imagine the great athletes those kids are going to be. Zach really figures to be a big part of this offense, and it was kind of unusual that he didn't seem to be as involved last year until later in the season. Everybody kind of expected him to bust out and be that vertical threat from the tight end position that every NFL team seems to have or seems to want. It is not a star-studded group at wide receiver. Jeremy Maclin leaves with 85 catches, goes to Kansas City. They draft Aguilar. They really feel highly about him. They think that Josh Huff in his second year, third-round draft pick last year, that he'll emerge. They signed Miles Austin, who once upon a time was a great, great receiver in Dallas, has had some injury problems. They think that the sports science program they run here can really help. So they want to spread it around. I think they're deeper potentially than they were last year. They don't have that quote-unquote star, the Pro Bowler. But I think Chip Kelly's – I just think in the NFL today – I don't know if you guys agree with me. I mean, I've been covering it for a long time. You've been around for a long time. It just seems so much easier to play wide receiver. You know, the defense can't touch you after 5 yards. These rookie impact players are so much more prevalent than they were years ago. They think that Aguilar can come in and contribute. He's mature. He knows the routes. He's got good hands. He's a big kid at 6 foot, 200 pounds. So it's a spread-around offense. They're going to use Sproles as a receiver. They're going to use Ertz, move him around. Brent Celek is still here after all these years, providing the tough catches and the inline blocking. So it's not a group that you go, hey, this is a Giants-esque, because I think the Giants have the enviable group of wide receivers with all those stars. This is kind of a younger group that they think will develop and deliver. And, again, the stars of the offense are the running backs. The wide receivers kind of play the supporting role.
We're joined by James Spadaro, PhiladelphiaEagles.com.
Just really, really quick, I have a player that I think could possibly be the next Victor Cruz, and that's Rashid Bailey, undrafted free agent wide receiver. Has he impressed you? If he has not, please be honest with me. Has he impressed you at all through OTAs in minicamp?
I will refrain from any sort of praise or criticism of wide receivers until the pads go on and the defense can actually play defense.
I dig this kid a lot. I think he makes the roster, Dave.
Going from Delaware Valley football to the NFL.
I do.
Huge.
I know.
Huge.
Okay.
Huge leap.
Sorry, had to get that in.
All right, Dave, I want to ask specifically before I jump to the offensive line, because I think that's really one of the important parts of the Eagles' offensive success this year. on Aguilar very quickly. All the stuff I heard about him coming out of college was quote-unquote NFL-ready. You mentioned the route tree. You mentioned his size. Did the Eagles project him as more of a possession type of guy that's going to catch a lot of those 10, 15-yard ins and be a reliable target, or is he going to be a guy that can stretch the field a little bit on the sideline?
He's not a blazer. You know, he's not DeSean Jackson, quick, straight-line speed. I think what they've really raved about with Nelson is after the catch, he has the ability to separate, and that's something they didn't have as much last year. You know, they didn't have that catch-and-go guy. So, you know, Chip needs somebody to stretch the D without Macklin here. I think Nelson can be that kind of player. But Josh Huff is also maybe a more explosive player than Nelson Aguilar. It remains to be seen. I believe that they will keep Jordan Matthews in the slot. He had 68 catches from that position last year. And I believe that on the outside, you know, Aguilar will have a chance to gain some playing time. But he is not a classic burner. He's a little sneaky quick, but he's not that, you know, 4.2, 4.3 kind of speed.
All right, I want to jump to the offensive line now real quick, Dave. Obviously, the Evan Mathis soap opera, which seemed to be 2 years in the making, finally got resolved a few weeks ago. It seems to me the Eagles got to be pretty happy with their center and tackle starters. But in terms of their guards right now, left guard and right guard, how are the Eagles feeling about what they have in those spots moving forward?
Left guard, they feel good. Alan Barber, they signed him to a contract extension before last year. But, you know, he's never been a starter for a full season in the NFL. He projects as the left guard. They do really speak highly of him. Right guard, toss-up. Could be Matt Tobin, could be Andrew Gardner, could be John Moffitt, who was a one-time starter in Seattle, who hasn't played in a couple of years, who they just signed a week ago. Right guard remains a question mark. They feel that Evan did not play well last year when he battled some injuries. Right guard, Todd Harriman's had some injuries last year. They didn't get good play there. So, no question. I mean, the guard spots are absolutely up for grabs. Got to prove it. Surrounding them with excellence on the edges at tackle and in the middle with Jason Kelce. No doubt about it, though. For this offense to really, really cook, those guards have to be solid. Not great, but solid. And I think they feel good about it, but you know how it is, guys. Once the pads go on and you're asked to play 16 weeks in this grind, you've got to have some depth. You've got to have some stout players along the front lines. And the Eagles have not had players. They don't have players who've shown in their careers that they're those players. So there's a leap of faith here a bit. The coaches really believe in some of the younger players and in a veteran, Alan Barber, who's never been in that position.
All right, Dave Spadaro, PhiladelphiaEagles.com. Before I jump to the defense, Dave, I know Lane Johnson had a rough rookie year. He had the suspension last year. How have the Eagles gauged his progress? Are they very happy with where he is right now as their starting right tackle?
Yeah, I would disagree with the concept of a rough rookie year. He started 16 games, and as every rookie, ups and downs. But
absolutely,
when you look at that draft, you know, Eric Fisher in Kansas City, wasn't really productive. I mean,
yeah, you know, Dave, you could actually make the argument he was probably the best of all the top 15 offensive linemen that year when you actually look back at that draft class.
Yeah, he played quite well. I mean, he's a great athlete. He was a quarterback in college, so he's not that far removed from there. But last year the suspension set him back. He's been training really hard in the offseason. He's done the MMA stuff out in Hollywood with Jay Glazer and to accentuate his punch, his violence with his hands at the line of scrimmage. They think he's the next star of this offensive line and ultimately will be the left tackle here. So they think that Lane can be a really top-grade right tackle.
All right, let's turn our focus, our attention to the defensive side of the ball. Again, Dave Spadaro joining us. You can find his work on Eagles.com. We're previewing each and every Giants opponent the next few weeks here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. One player that is on your roster, I was hoping would be on the Giants roster, and they would grab him in the second round, but of course they made a trade, moved up, and got a different safety, and that is Eric Rowe. Heard great things about him coming out of college. What have you seen from him so far? I see that he's listed at corner as opposed to safety. Many felt that making that transition from college to the pros, that he would make the transition into safety. But you got him playing corner. Talk about him and in the secondary.
Yeah, it's interesting. They really this defense last year gave up 72 plays, the most in the league. in the passing game 20-plus yards.
Wow.
So one of the huge, huge priorities in the offseason was to upgrade the secondary and to minimize those big plays. And Eric Rowe is one of six players the Eagles either signed in free agency or drafted to add to the secondary. So he's coming in as a cornerback. He did not take reps as a starter in the spring. Byron Maxwell, Nolan Carroll, who returned from last year, they took the starting reps. They do love Rowe. I mean, they love Rowe. He's got to play the physical game that they want. They want to come up and play press coverage. They want to smother receivers at the line of scrimmage. They want to disrupt timing. They're not going to back off and allow receivers to catch those underneath routes. They want to get in their grill right away. So, Rowe fits the profile: long arms, big body, physical player. But again, not as experienced a cornerback in college as he was at safety. Interesting to see how they teach him the transition. They've been pleased with him so far. Going to be good stuff in training camp and in preseason to see his development.
Yeah, and I thought what was really interesting, Dave, is that they decided to have Rowe play corner, and then they move a corner, mm-hmm. Walter Thurman, to safety. And when he was here, he got hurt very early in the season last year for the Giants, but in the spring and in the preseason, he was an excellent slot corner. He was a very good slot corner for Seattle before then. I know you guys have Brandon Boykin in there, who's also a very, very good player. But what was the thinking behind moving Walter Thurman out there to safety?
Well, the way the coaches describe it, the way the Eagles play safety, they don't play one up, one back. They play sides. There's in the coverage game, there are a lot of similarities to what a slot corner would do.
Interesting.
And so, they feel like Walter, and he's got to stay healthy. I mean, the injuries have been really plaguing him his entire career.
Yep.
They feel that he can cover as a safety, and like you said, as a slot corner, those skills translate to safety in the scheme.
Again, Dave Spadaro joining us. Kiko Alonso, part of that, mm-hmm. that trade that went down, and he comes in. Interesting is I hear that he's so much a leader, very vocal. Has he kind of already assumed that role on this defense?
Well, I think there's actually a no dearth of leadership with D'Amico Ryans, with Connor Barwin. What's striking about Alonso is, the Eagle, one of Chip Kelly's famous first year lines was big guys beat up little guys, and he's got a very strict kind of guidelines for positions, size, length, weight, and Kiko fits what they do as an inside linebacker, 6'3", 250 pounds, long arms, another player coming off an injury. They were ravaged inside at linebacker last year. D'Amico Ryans went down. Najee Good went down. I mean, they were playing backups, deep backups, late in the season. So they've restocked that group, and Alonso comes in with Michael Kendricks, with D'Amico Ryans, with the third-round draft pick, Jordan Hicks. And he's got a chance to start. They think he can do everything. They think he can drop back. I mean, they acquired him for the straight-up trade, which you don't see in the NFL very often. They traded their all-time leading rusher, LeSean McCoy, for Kiko Alonso. So that gives you an indication of what they think about Kiko. He's come back from the knee injury that he suffered last year, and he took all the reps in the spring and seems to be proceeding, knock on wood, with a full bill of health.
You're joined by Dave Spadaro, PhiladelphiaEagles.com. Couple more questions, Dave, before he lets you go. Sure. Thanks so much for the time. I caught a lot of heat here because we talked about the defenses in the NFC East a couple weeks ago, and I went out there and I said, look, I think the Philadelphia Eagles probably are going to have the best defense in the division, and here's why.
Wow.
The front seven for the Philadelphia Eagles, to me, from top to bottom, there isn't a weakness, and every spot there's quality depth, whether it's at linebacker or on the defensive line. How important is it to Chip Kelly to have that front seven be stout and be able to stop the run without having to bring that safety into the box and also be able to get pressure on the quarterback on third down?
Well, it's interesting and it's huge. And the front four group, the front three group, is a way underrated group. No, Fletcher Cox is an emerging player, but for the most part, you don't know anything about Benny Logan or Cedric Thornton or Taylor Hart, who was a fifth-round draft pick last year who didn't play, who's bulked up and they think he's going to be an outstanding player, or Vinny Curry. Really, really good group. Bo Allen, stout inside, excellent against the run. The linebackers, I will disagree with one statement that there's depth everywhere, because the outside linebacker position is a question mark. Starters in Brandon Graham and Connor Barwin. Barwin an All-Pro last year. Graham ready to take Trent Cole's role as starter. Who's the third linebacker?
How about Marcus Smith? He was a second-round pick, right?
Has a lot to prove after being a first-round pick last year. Played, you know, 68 snaps the entire season.
That's fair.
They don't have a proven third outside linebacker. But for the most part, yeah, good group. And if they can avoid injuries, potentially a great group.
Hey, before we let you go, I said I didn't have any more questions. I do have one.
Go ahead.
And I think right, Dave. How long have we known each other? You should know this by now. It's always one more with me. So, I think this is an intriguing one in regard to Tim Tebow. Okay.
Yeah.
Granted, not competing really for the quarterback position. Let's be honest. What I love about Chip Kelly is his mind and how he does think out of the box. And I know he was trying to lobby for that 2-point conversion from the 1-yard line. No, it ended up being on the 2. But I'm telling you what, if there's one person in the NFL that's unstoppable from the 2-yard line, it's Tim Tebow. could this be the year that Chip develops a 2-point conversion specialist in Team Tim Tebow, and that's what makes him make this roster? And every time the Eagles score a touchdown, they're going for 2, and chances are, you know what, you're not going to be able to stop Tim Tebow from the 2-yard line.
Yeah, I really fantasize about that.
Me too.
Don't we leave you guys alone
for a few minutes now?
Do you keep a quarterback active just for that? You know, I mean, can you do that?
Well, I mean, obviously you would slate him.
Wouldn't you
slate him under specials
on game days? Well, explain that to me. Why does that make any sense?
Yeah.
I mean, you're trying to save bodies. You're trying to save wear and tear. And you've got 6 players standing on the sidelines in sweatpants.
Yeah, Dave, I would imagine whenever they renegotiate the CBA, I bet you active players on game day is going to be one of the things that gets changed, not only from the player perspective, but from the coaching perspective, from the owner side as well.
Yeah, it just makes no sense to me. So, Tebow, he's so wildly up and down when you watch him in practice. He's not a classic. He's laborious to watch. He can be tough on the eyes when he's playing, in the sense that he's just not as fluid dropping back and throwing the football. But when you're rolling out of the pocket, when he's on the move, he's very dangerous. And I do think that Chip can put something together. However, you know, they have Matt Barkley as a third quarterback here. He has improved a lot. I think it's a true, legitimate battle for the third quarterback position. And I'm not sure a lot of teams can say that their 4 preseason games, that it's kind of must-watch TV in the fourth quarter of those games. I think the Eagles can say that because Tim Tebow's here. And it's going to be – and I've never seen a potential third-string quarterback who's talked about, who's got as much attention, who is as polarizing as Tim Tebow, going to be just – great watching in the preseason to see what Chip Kelly does with him.
Here's the funny thing, though, Dave. Is Bradford's injury history going to make it tougher for Tebow to make this team, since he's not that traditional quarterback you're talking about, and you want to make sure you have enough guys sitting behind him at quarterback?
Well, name a team that has won with a third quarterback.
Nobody.
Generally,
nobody.
Real tough to do that. So
absolutely.
You know, you kind of got to bank. I mean, I'm not saying anything against Matt Barkley or potentially Tim Tebow. I'm just looking at the history of the game. When you get to number 3, boy, it's hard to win in this league.
No, it is. All right, final question, Dave. Obviously,
real.
Yeah, I promise this time.
I don't believe it.
For Giant fans that aren't going to be locked into every Philadelphia Eagles preseason game like you are, what are a couple big picture things that they can keep an eye on that you'll be watching in these Eagle preseason games that might give a clue as to what type of team and how good the Eagles are going to be come the first couple weeks of the regular season?
Play at the quarterback position, the progress of Sam Bradford is number 1, and everybody in the league is going to be watching that. And then, to me, the defensive secondary coming together, what pieces is Thurman really a legitimate starting safety in this league? Are the cornerbacks a huge upgrade over last year? I think you can really focus on those 2 stories and get a sense of where the Eagles are when they get ready for the Falcons on September 14th. So many changes here. Chip Kelly's first season as the total decision maker. And he really went out there and made a lot of significant changes. How do you mix all of these new pieces together and get ready for the regular season? I think it's just. I've never seen it. Been covering every game since '87, and I've never seen a team that had the success the Eagles had the last 2 years, 10 wins in each of those two seasons, do so many changes, significant changes, key components overturned on this roster. But the quarterback play is absolutely number one.
Dave, thank you so much. It's a pleasure hearing your voice and spending some time with you this afternoon. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Always, guys, anytime. Good luck up in New York and enjoy the rest of the off season, and let's get ready for some fun in the NFC East this year.
Oh, it's going to be good, Dave, off season.
Yes, sir.
You know better than there's no off season, Dave. Come on.
I know. Well, hey, I'm telling you, for the first time all season, it's been like so quiet here. It's almost unnerving. We're just looking around the rest of the NFC East and finding out all the news. It's been nuts for what you guys are going through up in New York and certainly with the Cowboys. With Greg Hardy and Rolando McClain.
And Dez.
And then Deshaun Jackson's the king of the NFC East down in Washington. So we're just kind of, for once, the Eagles are the quiet story, the quiet neighbors in the division.
I appreciate it, Dave. Enjoy it while it lasts, my friend.
All right, thanks so much.
Appreciate it. Dave Spadaro, PhiladelphiaEagles.com.
So, I mean, what a great guest. Hopefully Giants fans enjoyed that 15-minute kind of preview of the Eagles and what's to come. Feel free to call in 201-939-4513.
Got about 5 minutes to play with. We can squeeze in a call or two.
So if you got any more questions, I know we were talking a lot about the defensive line prior to Dave Spadaro joining us. Maybe you have some more questions pertaining to that.
Now, I noticed you lift your eyebrows a little bit when I said I thought the Eagles were going to have the best defense in the
NFC. I did.
Now, and here's why.
I noticed it.
It's okay. Now, here's why I think I heard you.
I heard you. You're talking about the depth.
I think the front seven is just really, really strong. And Paul and I had an argument, or more of a debate. It was a good debate. And I agree with him. I think their questions at corner could, and I think that's why Dave brought up watching the secondary in the preseason being so important. You know, Byron Maxwell, how is he going to be the number one corner with all that extra responsibility? It's a lot different playing next to Richard Sherman than being the Richard Sherman on your team. You know
right.
what I mean? So how does he handle that? Does Rowe take a step forward? Can Thurman play safety? You know, those are all questions that have to be answered. But in terms of pass rushers, they got Connor Barron, who was excellent last year. Brandon Graham's up and coming. How can you not love their inside linebackers and Michael Kendricks, Kiko Alonso, and D'Amico Ryans? That's
right.
Unbelievable. Fletcher Cox is one of the best defensive linemen in football. Thornton, Logan, Vinnie Curry, these guys are all solid. I just think up front, they're going to be really strong. Now, their numbers might not match it. Because the problem you can have, the offense goes so quick,
mm-hmm.
the defense is on the field so much more.
Right.
And that's
going to
hurt their overall numbers. But if you want to go by a metric, as you can go like yards per snap allowed or something like that, I think they're going to be one of the best defenses in the NFC.
Yeah,
wow, how about that? You asked for calls, you got them, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, and I'm really going to be keeping an eye on Eric Rowe because this is a young man that I was really, especially when he did not go in the first round, I was really hoping the Giants would get him in the second round. But, of course, we know what the Giants did. They traded up and they got Landon Collins, and why not? I think a number of teams would have done that. So, for me, I'm always going to evaluate and judge these two players' careers because hopefully both of them are equally as successful. But I'm really big on Roe. 201-939-4513 is the phone number. Another topic I want to hit on with you before we head out to the calls, and that is, hypothetically speaking, again, we don't know what the situation is with JPP. Hopefully we will know soon. The Giants are doing their due diligence to get all the information necessary before they make a statement. But hypothetically speaking, let's say that the Giants have to start the season without him. What do you feel, this is an argument I had with Paul Dottino, do you feel this puts more pressure on the linebacking core, or do you think this puts more pressure on the secondary?
Oh, secondary. Absolutely. I mean, well, you know what? That's an interesting question.
Yep. That's why I threw
it out.
Because
JPP is such a good run defender. How much extra pressure does that put on the linebackers and be better against the run? But then again, if you're not getting after the quarterback, your corners have to cover for a lot longer. That is a really, really good question.
Marinate in it.
I will marinate in that, actually.
let's take some calls. 201-939-4513. Let's go to line three. Nick is calling in from North Carolina. Nick, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
What's up, Nick?
I just have one quick question on Jay Bromley. Do you think he can have the same jump in production going into his second year that Jonathan Hankins did going into his second year?
Great question.
I think asking for that big of a jump might be a little much. Remember, Bromley a third-round pick, Hankins a second-round pick. So you look at the talent level there, I think Hankins maybe with a little bit more natural ability and just girth. I mean, Jonathan Hankins is just a massive human being.
Right.
Not that Jay Bromley's small, but he's Jonathan Hankins is
right.
a beast.
Yeah, you have to move over.
Yeah, pretty much. He almost needs two lockers. But I think Bromley's going to be a lot better. I think he's also a different player than Hankins. I think Bromley's game revolves more around speed and quickness and penetration. And while Hankins can do that, I think his bigger strength of the player is his strength, his size, and his ability to plug and use his power.
I need to see more from Bromley.
And we have to see it on the field. That was the next thing I was going to say.
You know what I mean?
You can
like,
talk
like
about
I,
potential all you want. Potential
yeah.
does nothing until it actually shows up on the field.
You know, that's it for me. I would love to answer your question. I don't know. It's a really big question mark for me because I don't have a big sample size to feel one way or another about Bromley. Let's go to Lynn, calling in from Columbia, Maryland. Lynn?
Wrap it up for us, big man.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hi.
Well, obviously, like most Giants fans, sorry to hear about the JPP situation. Hope it works out for the best.
Yep.
Yeah, so do we.
For the Giants, and the guy's okay. First of all, and the guy's okay. I mean, want to see him be able to resume his career, if not with us, somewhere else, whatever, however it turns out. And I guess we shall see over the next couple of days. You know, there's something I've been wanting to throw out, and it may be unnecessary at this time to even talk about it. But, you know, once the Giants applied that franchise tender, my feeling was that there was not going to be a long-term deal. I don't know if the Giants had anything on the table or not. Assume they did. Let's just assume they did for the moment. There was something in there that JPP didn't like. So I never thought there was going to be a long-term deal. I thought, if anything, he would play 1 year. The longer it went on, and he didn't sign his tender, the more I began to believe he wasn't going to sign his tender by July 15th. In fact, I gave it about a 10% chance that he'd sign by the start of training camp.
Lynn, let me just interject here. A lot of times guys don't sign their tender because they don't want to attend OTAs and they don't want to attend the minicamp. And they don't want to attend the start of training camp. You know, that's, I mean, so it's, don't necessarily.
Let me just finish my thought.
No, I know, but it's important.
I know all that. I know all that.
Okay. Well, you've got to take that into consideration.
That's why I gave it about a 10%, chance that he'd be back by training camp. I give it a 40, if he's okay, perfect. I give it a 40% chance that he's back after the Bengals game.
Len, I'll say this.
There's no reason for two-a-days for JPP. Not at this point.
Well, Len, I'll say this. I think it's hard to put a percentage thing on it now because we just don't know what his health situation is. I mean, once the Giants release what his actual situation is,
right.
I think we can make a better determination about that sort of stuff. But until we know more, it's just hard for me to, you know, come to the conclusion without information.
Okay, 15 more words.
Okay, no, that's okay.
I give him about a 50% chance that he would be back the day after the New England game, when it gets to the point when there's $900,000 a week on the line. I think that was the guy's game plan anyway. Now, hey, if that was the game plan, you know, we got a little time here. It's you know, it's not anywhere near the Patriots game. I don't think he was going to sign the tender and come back. He was waiting. He was going to wait as long as he can. The whole point was to avoid injury. So he avoids injury until he starts losing $900,000 a game. Listen, I hope the guy's all right. Without him, we got a problem. So I hope he's back. I like the guy. I think he's a terrific football player. You got to have that edge rusher. You know, we're hoping against hope that DeMontre's the guy. We really need for this to work out with JPP. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
It's good to hear from you, my friend. And again, we'll wait and see. Hopefully in the coming days, we'll have more information. We'll be able to have more of a logical conversation about it. But until we know more, I know a lot of people are annoyed online that we're not talking about it more. But folks, If we don't know what the health situation is, we don't know if he's going to miss no time or if he's going to miss a lot of time, and we don't know any of this stuff, how are we supposed to have a real conversation about it? Everything's if.
Right.
Now, again, if you want to call up and talk about, you know, Robert Ayers or DeMontre Moore, the guys that if worse comes to worse, he can't play a couple games and someone has to, you know, step in there and, you know, play, that's fantastic. We could do that. But until we know what the deal is, we're just twiddling our thumbs here.
Before we do sign off, I threw out that question for you. You were able to marinate in it for a good 5 minutes.
I'm going to say linebackers, and I'm changing my mind. I realize that, and here's why.
You're allowed to change your mind.
I think the two starting corners are really, really good. So I think they can deal with not having a ton of pass rush up front. The biggest weakness this team had last year was what? Stopping the run.
Right.
We know John Beeson has an injury history, so I'm going to put that into the equation as well. Jason Pierre-Paul was not only the Giants' best run stuffer last year, but I believe the NFL's best run stuffer last year, a defensive end according to Pro Football Focus. So he's extremely powerful, and he's real good at that, despite the fact he still has issues guarding that read option with the quarterback. Let me understand that. But if he's not there at that end spot, who's the end that comes in and sets the edge on that side? Is it Robert Ayers? He struggled at that last year from time to time. Is DeMontre Moore? That's where he's had weaknesses over the course of his last couple years of his career. Can Kerry Wynn step in and do that? Can Owe step in and do that? We haven't seen enough yet. Can they? I don't know. So I want to go linebacker.
And one last thought I'm going to leave you with, and that is, and again, this is all speculation. We don't know. For all of us here at the Giants organization, we're praying, we're hoping that JPP will be fine and he will be ready to go game one. If not, I'm really intrigued how Spags is going to utilize Devon Kennard. Because I think Devon Kennard is one of those linebackers.
He's a good blitzer.
I think he's one of those linebackers that I think Spags can elevate to be one of those linebacking blitzers that's going to get the quarterback more so if this team has to start without JPP. Keep that in mind.
And I'll say this too. Even if JPP is there and 100% healthy, I think you're going to see not just Devon Kennard. I think you're going to see Landon Collins. I think you're going to see Jameel McClain. I think you're going to see John Beeson. I think you're going to see a lot of people in that back seven blitzing a lot more than what we've seen the last couple of years.
And Spags is going to have to earn that money, boy. He's going to have to come up with some really intriguing defensive schemes and whatnot. So, but again, we hope it doesn't get to that.
We shall see.
We want to thank everybody who tuned in to Big Blue Kickoff Live today. For myself, John Schmoke, for all of us here at the Giants facility. Are you back on tomorrow with Paul?
No, I believe tomorrow is the day Paul is solo. Right?
Oh, okay. That's right.
Tomorrow's the 8th.
And I'm sure Paul will have a ton of calls. So make sure you keep Paul D'Agostino company tomorrow. And, he's rolling solo.
And tomorrow he will have Larry Michael, who's play-by-play for the Redskins, on.
That's right.
Now, again, if some JPP news does come out from the team, you know, we'll probably adjust and just take calls on that. But for now, we have Larry Michael coming on from the Redskins, and I think he's trying to book a Falcons guest as well. But again, if news breaks between now and then, we'll have it, and we could talk about that tomorrow, and that'll be the big topic on tomorrow's show.
Fantastic. Again, thank you so much for tuning in to Big Blue Kickoff Live. Have a great afternoon, everybody.
Take it easy.
Oh, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Intercepted!
Touchdown, Giants!